Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Have you ever wondered where in the world people live the longest or the healthiest? It turns out the answers to those questions have been studied by a National Geographic fellow named Dan Buettner, who has commercialized his work into best-selling books and a business model that helps communities optimize their health. Buettner traveled the world to find the places where people live longest and healthiest. Community members in these places live on average up to 12 years longer than the average American, with a much lower degree of chronic disease and disability. What's the secret to success in these places? It may not surprise you, but healthy living and eating are a big part of it. What comes as a surprise is that it's not diets and exercise the way we think of them. Rather, it's the lifestyle of eating locally grown foods, heavy in plants, and exercise that occurs naturally by things like walking or gardening, not always jumping in our cars. Faith and community also are strong predictors of longevity, and as we'll see, having a personal mission statement, really just a clear sense of purpose, adds years to your life, statistically speaking. My guest today is Tony Buettner, one of Dan's younger brothers, who's the Director of Business Development for Blue Zones. He'll be in Tulsa today meeting with civic stakeholders and will be appearing at the Schusterman Learning Center on the OU Tulsa campus tonight from 5 to 6:30 in an event that's free and open to the public. Tony Buettner, welcome to the program. Let's start by just asking, what are the Blue Zones?
Blue Zones are places around the world where people are living to extraordinary ages without the chronic diseases we face here in America. After a 15-year worldwide longevity study, our team found five of these areas around the world. The first we found was in Sardinia, Italy. Now, this is a place where you find the longest-lived men. They live 10 years longer than we do here in America. We found another blue zone in the archipelago of Okinawa. And Okinawa has what every community in America wants. They have the longest-lived women. They live 12 years longer than we do. They have the longest disability life expectancy in the world. They live 7 good years longer than we do on average. They have 5 times as many centenarians, 1/5 the rate of breast and colon cancer, and 1/6 the rate of cardiovascular disease. We found another blue zone on the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica, and it's here the whole population has 3 times the chance to live to a healthy age 90. We found America's blue zone in Loma Linda, California, actually amongst the Seventh-day Adventists. There, again, they're living on average about 10 years longer than we do. Something called the Adventist Health Study has been tracking this population for 30 years. It's considered a gold standard epidemiology study. And then our last blue zone we found on the island of Ikaria, Greece, population of about 8,000 people. It's here you find a perfect storm of strategies leading to almost no dementia or no chronic disease. They live on average 8 years longer than we do here in America.
So a quick question about the 5 blue zone places. Are they ranked in the way you listed them, or was that just how you found them, or is that just the smorgasbord?
Actually, something called the Danish twin studies established that our longevity is tied to our genes by only 20%. The other 80% is environments and lifestyles. So when we led off on this expedition, our premise was if we could find the right environments and lifestyles that supported longevity, we would have the de facto recipe. The approach that we used was to find demographically confirmed and geographically defined pockets where people are living extraordinary ages. So it was a matter of looking at these clusters, checking birth records, death records, and then actually hiring the brightest minds in epidemiology, nutrition, anthropology, longevity study, and actually embedding ourselves into these cultures for many, many months to really try to figure out what was going on there.
Now, you talk about this expedition and it taking 15 years. I mean, how is something like that undertaken? I mean, that's a huge endeavor. I mean, just conceiving of it, let alone executing it. I mean, how did this even get started?
Absolutely. I come from a family of 4 boys, and the oldest is the founder and CEO of Blue Zones, my brother Dan. And Dan, prior to this expedition, was a world record bicyclist. He has 3 Guinness Book World Records. He's biked from Alaska to Argentina around the 45th parallel and from the northern tip of Africa to the southern tip. So all 3 of my brothers and myself have been on most of these expeditions. Even my father has come along on a few. After these expeditions, Dan became quite a writer and explorer. doing speeches around the country. He started what's called Quest Network after those expeditions, trying to discover some of the mysteries of the world. The first was a Maya Quest, where he hired experts, embedded himself into Central America to find out what happened to the Mayan civilization. And this expedition uplinked to over a million kids around the country, which actually had a chance to vote on how this expedition unfolded. And that caught the eye of National Geographic. And they were the ones that came to Dan and asked him, with a grant from the National Institute of Aging and National Geographic, would he be willing to try to find the longest-lived populations and find out what was going on there. So that's really was the catalyst for this research and the beginning of the work that we've done.
Wow. And so he was he a sort of what we would call a true academic in that his Mayan expedition, was that sort of self-funded or was that through an educational institution? How did that come about?
It's funny you should ask. I remember back in junior high school when he was planning his Alaska to Argentina bike trek, he actually figured out every single thing you would need for this type of expedition, figured out the companies that manufactured them, and then wrote them letters. I remember coming home from school to mountains of FedEx packages on our parents' front doorstep. And with the gaps, what he did is he went out to major employers and organizations to get funding to do these expeditions. So he is a true entrepreneur, one who never really quite figured out what he was going to do when he grew up, and has continued to be a pure explorer. He is a National Geographic Fellow and explorer.
Wow, that is quite interesting to have that kind of foresight at such a relatively young age and to be able to plan something like that. I mean,
it's
more than most people could even conceive of doing, let alone that level of exercise. So you told us about the Blue Zones. There are these five places in the world where longevity excels. People have the longest lifespans, but they tend to be the healthiest. And you mentioned that, which I think is, it's not just living long, but it's living well. So it's, no dementia, it's lack of chronic illnesses, I suspect like diabetes and the ravages of obesity, which we see a lot of in the United States. So how do people that don't live in the Blue Zones get to use this knowledge?
Well, for us, it's discovering what is helping people and places excel in health and longevity. Here in America, on average, we will spend 10 years, our final 10 years, suffering some type of chronic illness. In the Blue Zones, what you find, when these people get sick and they die quickly, on average, about 9 months. So researchers here in America say that in this country, we should be living on average to age 90. Unfortunately, we live to age 78 on average. We leave 12 good years on the table. And what we do is look to the Blue Zones to figure out the secrets of longevity and figure out how can we take some of those commonalities, which we call the Power 9, and incorporate those into our life. How do we optimize our homes so that the healthy choice is easy, our families, our committed social networks, and how does purpose play into that? Then we look at those places where we live, work, and play, our work sites, the schools that our children go to, the restaurants and grocery stores that we eat and shop at. And how about faith? What does that play into this? And how can we leverage communities to implement permanent and semi-permanent changes to environments and lifestyles and building designs to make the healthy choice not only the easy choice, but in many cases, the unavoidable choice?
So what is it about the Blue Zones, these five places in the world where people live the longest and the healthiest? What's the special sauce? And you alluded to some of them, but I guess could you go into more detail? So nutrition clearly seems like a part of it. I'm interested also in faith. And what I found interesting when I read the books, people in these places aren't going to the gym, right? I mean, it seems like physicality is sort of built into their everyday lives.
These populations move. They move naturally. On average, of the over 300 centenarians we talked to, they're moving every 20 minutes on average. So they're not a sedentary society or people. They live in deconvenienced homes. They don't have electrical convenience that they push a button for every activity. They have gardens. Most of their trips are not jumping in a car and driving when it's possible. You see them biking and walking and socializing. And as you said, they don't pump iron. They don't run marathons. Instead, they live in those environments that constantly nudge them into moving without thinking about it. We saw that having the right outlook was common. these populations know how to downshift. So these people do experience stress, but stress leads to chronic inflammation associated with every major related disease. And what these longest-lived people have are routines to shed stress. Okinawans take a few moments every day to remember their ancestors. Adventists pray. Icarians take a nap. Sardinians, they socialize. They have a profound sense of purpose. And we know from research, people that can articulate their mission statement live 7 years longer than people that don't. In Okinawa, they call it ikigai, which means the reason I get out of bed in the morning. In Costa Rica, it was plan de vida. And it translates into knowing that sense of purpose and putting it to work, be it volunteering. These populations, they ate wisely. Surprisingly, we saw a small amount of alcohol consumption in all these populations. Typically, it was about 3/4 of a glass for women and about a glass and a half for men. It was typically red wine. It was almost always a drink with friends and family and almost always with a healthy meal. And we know from research the health benefits of a little bit of wine with a Mediterranean diet. This was the profound one. They lived primarily on a plant-based diet. 95% of what they ate was plant-based. And that's not to say they didn't eat animal protein, because they did. But typically, they'd eat it 4 to 5 times a month. It was typically a celebratory event, and portion size was very important. 3 to 4 ounces only. You don't see people eating 24-ounce T-bones and 18-ounce pork chops. And then they had strategies not to overeat. Their strategy was to eat like a king for breakfast, a prince for lunch, and a pauper for dinner. They'd eat off of smaller plates, or they would pre-plate their food in the kitchen and put the leftovers away. Or the Okinawans, when they sit down to eat, they would say simply this phrase, hare hache bu. And when you have that translated, it means stop eating when your stomach's 80% full. Imagine being able to cut out 20% of your calories with that simple mantra. And then what we believe is the foundation of all of this is how they were connected. They put their loved ones first. They kept their aging parents close, which affords an additional 4 to 6 years of longevity. They nurtured monogamous spousal relationships, and they really took care of their children. These populations belonged. We talked to 263 centenarians, and only 3 did not belong to a faith-based community. Now, faith has many faces, but research shows people that show up to a faith-based community a minimum of 4 times a month live 4 years longer than those that don't. We don't know exactly why. Is it because of the healthy behaviors? Is it because of those committed social networks? And then lastly, and we believe this is the strongest, they belong to the right tribe. And when I say that, I mean they were born into or actively seeked out committed, healthy social circles. So we know if your 3 best friends are obese, you have a chance, 160% greater chance of being obese. Well, it's the same with tobacco usage, depression, loneliness, but healthy behaviors are the same. So imagine having these healthy behaviors in a social network, how that would just expand through networks.
The data that you just recited really speaks for itself, and I'm really obviously impressed by certainly the statistic on people who are faithful or regularly in faith communities. That's pretty astounding. You certainly alluded to the nutrition aspect. The things that I think would be sort of easy sells in, you know, for what it's worth, generalizing to American culture, you know, we all understand it would like to be less sedentary. I think we'd like to move around more. But wouldn't you suspect that it's going to be tough to sell? You know, you made the clear point. It's not total vegetarianism, but it's heavily plant-based diets. That's something culturally I think is very difficult to work with. And then I think you mentioned they live in, I don't remember your phrase exactly, deconvenient or inconvenient homes, where they don't have a lot of electrical appliances and they're out, you know, in the garden. I think the gardening is appealing, but I don't think we want to give up our creature comforts. So how do you sort of get that message across to American audiences?
Well, first of all, American audiences don't like to be told what to do. Let's look at the strategies that we're using right now to increase health. Things like gyms and diets and supplements. Don't get me wrong, exercise is good, but this is not a long-term strategy. These are short-term wins and long-term failures. If we had 100 people start a diet today, Within 3 months, we'd lose 10%. In 7 months, we'd lose 90%. And after 2 years, you would only have three people on that diet. There's not a diet in the history of the world that has worked for more than 3% of the population for over 2 years. They don't work. How about gym memberships on January 1st? We all have great intentions, but the reality there is after 2 years, you drop off 70% as well. And if we at Blue Zones could bring a pill that people could take every day and gain those 12 good years back, we couldn't get enough people to take them. It doesn't work. So what does work? With a grant from National Geographic again, we were asked to study community health initiatives around the world that had taken an unhealthy population and made them healthy. It took us 2 years to find one, and that is the North Karelia Project. And what they did for the first time was take the focus off of individuals, telling people to sleep more, eat more vegetables, quit smoking, connect a little more, have faith. Instead, what they looked at, remembering what drives longevity, environments and lifestyles, they looked at the environments where people lived, work, and play, and implemented permanent and semi-permanent changes to those environments that each person or organization could choose that fit that organization or that person that made the healthy choice easy. And after 3 years, they were able to drop heart attacks in working age men by 85% and had held that for 30 years. So our team created what we call the life radius approach to population health. And what we do is we start with people. We help them optimize their home. We give them a list of 50 different evidence-based strategies that permanently change their home. And I'll give you an example. When you go to your refrigerator and to find fruits and vegetables, where do you find them?
They're always in the drawers or not readily
out of sight,
yeah,
and out of mind. So I guess I'd remind your listeners, when you get home tonight, empty out those old rotten vegetables and fruits. What Blue Zones would suggest is, how about on Sunday night, chop fruits and vegetables into single servings and put them on the top shelf of your refrigerator? Wouldn't that make the healthy choice the easy choice? How about getting a dog? What happens if you have a dog when you get home? You have to walk the dog. It's the impact of having activities that you do every day that has the long-term benefits. And it's up to people to choose what works for them. Imagine if people on Monday had a meatless Monday and started to cook and discover plant-based eating. Just that small activity could ignite people to like that type of cooking a little more and have an impact in their health. So what we've done is helped people optimize their home, optimize their social networks, getting people committed to walk and bike and discover purpose and healthy eating. How about purpose workshops to help them identify what they're good at, what they like to do, and help them create a mission statement and put those rich gifts to work as a volunteer in their community? We know volunteers suffer lower rates of BMI and lower rates of chronic disease. And then how can we help employers make healthy choices easier there to help them control healthcare costs and claims? How about restaurants to offer healthy choices for people and drive business to the restaurants? How about grocery stores to make fruits and vegetables more accessible or grab and goes a little easier? How about schools, getting kids more healthy nutrition education, getting them moving and walking and moving more? 30 years ago, 57% of us walked to school. Today, it's down to 11%. The problem with this is research shows it's safer to walk to school now, but if you look at childhood obesity and when it started going up, it started going up and we stopped walking to school. So how can we create safe routes to school and walking school buses and bus-to-walk programs? And how about faith? How can we make faith-based communities healthier? How about in a community every first Sunday of the month, people walk or bike to church? I mean, we've done this for many, many decades. And then most importantly, how can we work with city leaders to look at the built environment? Does every city have to be completely built only for cars? Or how can we look at complete streets policies where not only do we have the space for cars, but how about for bikers? And how about for walkers? We know for every dollar, that we invest in biking in a community, it pays off $12. And how about tobacco policy and food policy? How can we make vegetables and fruits easier to get, a little less expensive? Things like mobile markets, farmers markets, community gardens. The secret is creating a systems approach where communities implement evidence-based strategies and choices that they choose, but they do it all at the same time, march in the same direction. And we've created a project called the Blue Zone Project that's active in 9 states and 30 communities to this point. There's over 2 million people living in America's Blue Zones at this time.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. My guest is Tony Buettner. He's the Director of Business Development for Blue Zones, which focuses on longevity and good health from the Blue Zones of the world. And Tony Buettner will be speaking in Tulsa tonight at the Schusterman Learning Center on the OU Tulsa campus. The talk is from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Doors open at 4:30, and the talk is free and open to the public. And Tony, before the ID, you were talking about what I would refer to from what I've read. It sounded like the book Nudge, with choice architecture, for, you know, where you have the school cafeteria, where you have the fruits and vegetables out front instead of the French fries and the pizza, or in your own refrigerator at home. I mean, it's really building in making the right choice easy.
Absolutely. It is that. Here's the reality. Each American makes about 200 health decisions every day. 200. But we're only cognitive of about 30 of those. Imagine if we could set up a perfect storm of where we live and where we work and where we play so that the healthy choice is not only easy, but unavoidable. And again, this is all about choice. This isn't about government. This isn't about organizations telling people what to do. This is about the fact that the first time in human history, it's projected that our children are going to live less long lives than we do. And I ask your listeners, is this because we don't love our kids as much as our parents loved us? Of course, the answer is no. Is it because our parents loved us more than we love our kids? No. The brain is a muscle and muscles fatigue. We can't leave our homes anymore without just instinctively jumping into the car. How about walking and biking to those places within a mile? When we do get in our car, it seems like we run a gauntlet of fast food restaurants, sugar-sweetened beverages. We can't even rent a movie without being funneled through a gauntlet of sugar-sweetened beverages and snacks and salty snacks. What the Blue Zone Project does is works with communities and organizations and brings forth evidence-based strategies, nudges and defaults that have worked elsewhere around the country. They're all science-backed, evidence-based for each organization to implement as they choose, but at the same time creating this perfect storm of well-being that is moving the needle measurably. When we came back from our expeditions in 2007, AARP approached us and asked us if we could replicate a blue zone here in America. And we created our program using the Life Radius strategy, and we chose a city by the name of Albert Lea, Minnesota, just an all-American town, kind of on the decline. They had lost their largest employer. Tobacco rates were high. Obesity rates were high. A population of about 22,000 people in southern Minnesota. And we worked with them and with experts for over 13 months implementing our strategies. And after that time, we saw a 47% decrease in city workers' health care claims. We saw a 17% decrease in tobacco usage in the county. We had trail counts out and measured before and after. We saw an 80% increase of people walking and biking. We saw restaurants extraordinarily busy, those that were offering healthy choices. Restaurants had healthy checkout lanes where they saw healthy beverages and healthy snacks skyrocket, and the sales of sugar-sweetened beverages and candies go down. They had shelf talkers of healthy foods. They went up 43%. But what was born in Albert Lea, Minnesota 7 years ago was a community that broke down silos and worked together in all sectors of the community to implement evidence-based choices to make the healthy choice easy. And 7 years later, they're known around the world as innovator in population health.
So I could see how you get a community or a faith-based community interested you know, exercise or walking groups or walking school buses. But how do you get a restaurant to change its menu if it's successful, or a grocery store to change its formula? Is it where there's community pressure? Or you're right, we Americans do not like to be told what to do or what to buy. So how do you work that?
Here's the reality. There is a lot of communities around this country that have had enough. They're sick of seeing their kids become isolated, sitting in front of a computer or a Game Boy. They're not happy with the meals being served at schools. They're not happy not having healthy choices. They want better for their kids. They want to leave their community a better place than they found it. They just don't know how. So what we have is a process of educating a community to what a Blue Zone project is, and to let them determine, is this something that they're interested in? Is this a good fit? The magic comes in having each sector of the community, those leaders signing on. So when it comes to implementing policies and programs, those things that last for years and decades, that they're allowed to do that. What the Blue Zone Project does is works with community volunteers to create also that grassroots movement that really ignites and shows those leaders that this is what the community wants. Is there a little friendly pressure? There can be at times, but we're talking about our kids here. We're talking about choice here. We're talking about healthier communities, and people can buy into that. When it comes to restaurants, what we've been able to measure using the Gallup Healthways Wellbeing Index is in the communities that we're active in, over 90% of the community knows what the Blue Zone Project is, and over 43% on average are actually active in it. So imagine having that many people learning about the project, participating in the project. So when it comes to restaurants and restaurant choices, people are going to go to those restaurants that offer healthy choices, but not necessarily a vegan restaurant, but a restaurant where there's healthier choices for them to choose. Grocery stores, profitability lies in fruits and vegetables, water, and their natural markets. In all of our markets, we see increases in those areas. So this is really a natural progression of a well-aligned community that has tried some things. They haven't seen the measurable impact, and this is for those special communities that really want to drive change. What the Blue Zone Project has been able to do is when a community demonstrates this evidence-based, systematic, and inclusive approach, they're seeing line of sight to funding PEP grants for schools, grants for safe routes to school, complete streets policies. Some of our cities have had upwards of $40 million worth of gifts and grants just because of this work. So lots of benefit in lower healthcare costs and claims, lots of benefit to drive economic impact. Imagine if a large employer is looking at Tulsa or another city, are they going to go to a city that's a healthy population of employees or a non-healthy? They're going to look to where healthcare costs and claims are. And where do people want to move with their young families? They want to move to a vibrant community where their kids can go to schools with healthy choices, active choices, where they have parks and biking and walking. So it just makes good sense from an economic impact perspective as well.
Well, Tony Buettner, you have really given us some food for thought and really is quite fascinating. I wish we had more time to talk, but the good news is you're going to be here doing a free and open to the public community-wide event at the Schusterman Learning Center on the OU Tulsa campus tonight from 5 to 6:30. Doors open over there at 4:30 to register. Tony Buettner from Blue Zones, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so very much.
Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.